Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Everybody, welcome to another version of Bill Roden on Sports. I'm here in an undisclosed location north of New York City, and hanging in there with my friend and co-host, the great Jamal Murphy. Murph, what's up?
What's up, Bill? Same old. I'm good here in Brooklyn, and it went from rain to serious heat out here. We're like in the 90s.
Well, our guest who's dialing in from L.A. could talk about heat. Not only heat from the heat, but heat from the fires. Anyway, our guest is a great Rob Parker, somebody I'm privileged to call a friend for quite a while, probably one of the most versatile and talented people in our industry, and has always been a brother throughout, which is no small accomplishment. And I feel they beat you down and shit till you cry uncle. But Rob is he's got so many credentials, but and we'll tell you about that later. But he's a contributor to the undisputed, not the undefeated. We hope we get him with the undefeated.
You're undefeated, right?
But he's a contributor to Undisputed with Skip and Shannon and the Herd on FS1. He's co-host of The Odd Couple with another great friend, Chris Broussard, on Fox Sports Radio. It's really a fun listen. I mean, really, really, you could tell these guys know each other. They like each other. They're really good friends. Two good brothers. He's a columnist at Deadspin, and just historically, he was the first black columnist at the Detroit Free Press, first black columnist at Newsday, which says more about our fucking industry than, you know. ESPN was an ESPN analyst for 8 years, born and bred New Yorker, and he still got his barber shop in Detroit. That's the big thing. What did you say, Rob? 19 years?
19 years, Bill. It's called Sporty Cuts on West 7 Mile Road. One of the best investments I ever made. Me and my barber was cutting my hair one day. We were talking. He said he wanted to open up a barber shop. I said I wanted to open up a barber shop. We decided to do it together. And it's been 19 years. And man, I love it.
That's great. That's great. We'll get into that later on. You always been an entrepreneur.
I know. We've been talking about this for a while, and finally it's happened. I'm happy to be here. And I should say, real quick, just for people who don't know, when I first started in the business in New York, I'm going to tell you the story, Bill.
Here we go.
Real story. Jamal, this is Bill Roden. This is who he is. Seriously. Uh-huh. So he's working at the New York Times. I work at the Daily News. I'm like 22 years old. We're covering St. John's basketball. And back then, Jamal, the beat writers who covered St. John's, we're talking about Mark Jackson,
right?
Walter Berry, Lou Carnesecca was the coach, but it was Bill Roden from the Times, me from the Daily News, Michael Kay, the Yankee announcer, from the New York Post, right, and a woman named Sandy Keenan, who was a sports writer, and now I think she went into management at Newsday. We were the four people covering St. John's back then. So it was my first road trip. I don't even know what I'm doing. Somehow I get off a plane in Buffalo. Bill Roden sees me, and he goes, "You got a car?" And I'm like, "No, rent a car. I'm 40,000. I don't have a car." He goes, "Where are you staying?" I say, "I'm at the team hotel." He goes, "Okay, get in the car with me." And Bill takes me and shows me around and helps me the whole way through my first road trip ever. And that's the kind of guy. I didn't have to ask him for help. He just automatically offered it. And as Bill knows, I became a mentor to a lot of people, mostly because of people like Bill and other people who helped me when I was first starting out. And I always said, if I ever have a chance to help young people long, I'm gonna do the same exact thing. So I always appreciate you.
Right. Yeah, Rob always tells that story, and he forgets. He said, I do remember it like it was yesterday. Because St. John's
was
rolling.
You know what? I'll leave out the other part. You know?
Uh-oh, wait a minute. Tell me about the other part first.
Uh-oh.
what's the other part? Jamal can always edit it out.
I'm not telling the other part. It's all good.
before we get started, let me just help pay the bills here. As we all know, the NBA, MLB, and NHL are in full swing, and our partners at Bet Online have you covered. I don't know about you guys, but I'm looking at the NBA. From what I've seen so far, I got to put my money on the Lakers to win it all. If you had to bet some futures, who you got, Lakers or Clippers?
I'm taking the Clippers. I mean, they have a better roster. Everybody's looking at, they're not down in the series. If Paul George played average, the series would be over already. I mean, right. Let's just be honest.
All right. We'll get back to that. But as far as Bet Online, take full advantage of sports being back and get in on the action with hundreds of odds, futures, and props for you to bet on. And there's always an online casino as well. It never closes. Go ahead to betonline.ag today and sign up to receive your welcome bonus on your first deposit. Again, that's betonline.ag and sign up today.
Do we get a discount?
I hope so. I'll check on that.
Better than that, do we get the inside line? Hey, you know, Rob, there's tons of stuff, man, we want to ask you about and all that. But a few years ago, I run a sports and recreation program at my church in Harlem. And the kids are all addicted to NBA 2K. I mean, the kids are addicted to it. In fact, maybe 8 years ago, I broke down and went ahead and bought like 2K so they could, so I realized. But when I watched it, I realized that, man, this is probably going to be the future. Because I was looking at it and I was like, well, here you got the artificial fans. You got artificial piped in noise. You know, you got action. You got like Doris Burke. You got announcers. And it's like they created this whole reality. And I was thinking, man, this could be where we are going. Like, you know, stuff could actually, you could actually have contests in a studio. And lo and behold, man, here's this pandemic. And here we are with, you know, the NBA in a bubble, made for TV, piped in noise. What have you thought about what you've seen so far? Are you liking it more than you thought you would?
You know, the idea, it's funny that you say that. There was the old TV show Star Trek. There's an episode where they beam down and they're in like some people have like recreated Nazi Germany, and those guys have to fight like gladiators, right? It's like, and it's set up in the studio and they have the hissing and the cheers. You know what I mean? It's like a TV show. And that's what I think of when I think of what we're watching. I don't know if we'll go there yet. I mean, there's always a possibility, but there's also a lot of money to be left on the table by not having fans.
Right.
So I don't think that they're going to abandon that. I mean, but Bill, you're right. It's basically a television show. That's like the NFL. That's what I think the NFL is. That's why it does so well on Sunday nights. It's been the number one TV show, right, for the last 10 years. Just think about that. The NFL was never that, but now it's become this TV show more so than a sporting event where people are comfortable. It's once a week. You know, like the old days when we used to sit down and watch your favorite show, you can do that once a week. People will make time for that. And the other thing is, television, the saving grace of television is actually sporting events. It's the only thing that we have appointment television that we want to watch live. Everything else we can watch when we want. Do you know what I mean? Like we can watch all the episodes at one time, binge watch, everything. Sports is still the only thing. That's why look at the contracts, the television contracts and the money. People think baseball is going somewhere. Baseball has nothing but inventory and live television games. Look at the money that is generated, the local TV money, Bill, not even national. National secondary, that's how much money is made locally on television. I think in Philadelphia a year or two ago, the Philly signed a $500 billion television deal for local TV rights. So television is a big part of sports, and I've enjoyed it. Considering that there are no fans or whatever. But as you know, Bill, because of covering sports for all these years, there's still, to me, nothing like being at an arena or a stadium, you know, with the crowd, a big game, you know, and the whole atmosphere. That's one thing you can't get from television. I don't care how big it is or how loud your speakers are.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been joined with Aaron Mathewson, producer with CNN. Aaron, thank you for joining us today.
Hello. Apologies for being late.
Yeah. Hello. Late live, too. I mean, like, you imagine like the Johnny Carson show, and Ed McMahon walks in like, you know, midway through things. I got caught in traffic. But thank you, Aaron adds a lot. So Rob, man, tell us, how has the pandemic been for you professionally? Has it been beneficial to you? You know, what's it been like?
It's been different, but Bill, I've never been busier, to be honest. I mean, I got the Deadspin.com column during the pandemic. I've written 2 books during the pandemic.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I've been working. I really have. I'm actually, a book about my life is coming out. Next month. It's called Rob Parker and the People Who Made Me, and Bill Roden is in that book.
Okay. And not with the untold story.
Not with the untold story. But I'm just giving you a little, so yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah. When is that coming out, Rob?
It's really about the people throughout my life who have influenced me and who have helped me along to make me who I am. I think it's an inspirational kind of read, and you realize that there's so many different people you come in contact with. And if you listen to people and you take advice to people who have done that, been there, it will benefit you. It can only help you. And one of the people is Rupert Murdoch. And I'll tell you this story. So I'm 16 years old. And just think, I go to my high school principal. The school paper, I went to Martin Van Buren High School in Queens Village. And the school paper takes forever to come out. Remember, this is 1980. So you got to write the story. They got to typeset it. You know, they got to print the paper. So, Bill, I would write a high school story about the basketball team. By the time the paper comes out, it's baseball season. That's like the problem.
Wow.
So I'm like, this doesn't work for me. So I go to the principal. I say, I want to start an all-sports newspaper that comes out every month on time. Wow. This is before the National, Bill. So my paper came out before the National.
Okay? Wow.
So the principal, older white guy, goes, we're not doing that. The kids are only going to throw it on the ground, and we don't have money for it to print. This is like an educator. A young black kid comes in about journalism, and this guy tells me they don't have money to do it, and they basically get lost. So I'm like, I'm not going to be turned away. And I'm saying, well, what if I raise the money myself for the printing costs? Can we do the paper? So he says, yeah, you can pay for it. So I go home to my kitchen, I get my typewriter, and I write 3 letters. And I write to the publisher of every paper in New York. So I write a letter to the New York Times, to the Daily News, and to the New York Post. The Daily News was my favorite paper, no response. I get a letter from the New York Times, and Bill Roden, this is the God's honest truth. They write me a letter back, and they say it's against their company policy to help other people start newspapers. I was 16. Somebody actually sat down and wrote a letter to a 16-year-old. I was
crushing everybody.
Right. This is what they sent me a letter. Dear Mr. Parker. I mean, I couldn't believe it. So the last letter comes in. And back then, Rupert Murdoch was a newspaper publisher. He published the New York Post, the Boston Herald, the San Antonio Express or Lightbill. You know, he was just breaking into the United States. Do you know I open up the letter from the New York Post? I can still see the return address, 210 South Street. You know that, right? Yeah. 210 South Street in the old days. There was a check in there from Rupert Murdoch's office for $50 to start my
business. Wow.
And now, and Bill, the importance of it to me, and I say this all the time, that whoever sent that money to me from there, they knew that money was going to somebody black because my address was Jamaica, Queens, Jamaica. You know Jamaica's a black.
Right.
It ain't no ifs, ands, or buts like maybe, you know, like, no, this money was going to a black guy who wanted to start an all sports newspaper. I told Rupert Murdoch this story a couple of years ago. He couldn't believe it. He didn't remember, of course. But whoever was in his office, it was addressed to him, whoever opened his mail, somebody read that and sent me a check. And now I work for him. This is the second time I worked for him at the Fox News Channel back in the late 90s. And now I'm here at FS1 in LA. And I thank them for that. He was instrumental in me believing in my dreams and believing anything was possible.
Wow, that's a great story. So what did the principal say when you came in and said you had the money?
Did you get that going?
Oh, yeah, I got it going. Are you kidding? It ran for a couple of years and even ran a couple of years after I graduated. So the paper, it was called Sports Line because the high school newspaper was called the B-Line, B-E-E. And so I named it Sports Line. And then it was funny, like, this was 1980, and then the National, I think, came out, Bill. What was that, 97 or?
Well, no. The National must have come out around 1989, 87, because
The
big deal then was that there were no black sports columnists, and the guy Frank DeFord, started the National and did not have any black sports columnists.
Right.
And there was Wilbon there, Burwell, I remember being in the audience, there was something. And I remember I asked him that, it was like in some kind of, you had this thing, you had this opportunity, there were no black sports columnists. And he gave something. And I know DeFord got, reputed being a good guy, but I never really forgave him for that. I said,
When that stuff goes on, I don't know, just recently, the station I used to work for in Detroit, 97.1, it's the Ticket. It's the only sports station in Detroit. They had, for the last 3 years, had no black full-time host on the station. I wrote a column on Deadspin about it, what a disgrace it was in a city that's 83% black, that they don't have one black voice on the station. And do you know what, Bill? They did a piece on television locally. Hugh Perkins, a longtime black anchor man at Fox 2 in Detroit, did a piece on it. And do you know they hired a black guy within 2 weeks?
Yeah.
And put him on afternoon drive. So they didn't put him on at 2:00 in the morning. But my point was, we shouldn't allow this to happen. And it's wrong. These stations and these people should be called out. We should have representation. It was like the Fan for a long time. I know they have
a black
now. But his name?
They do?
I think I heard that also, but I haven't listened in a while.
Yeah, but they had, who was it? Bart Scott, who just left and went to
ESPN. True. Right, they had Bart Scott. Right.
And this is the other thing, Bill, which is a crime, is that the godfather of sports talk radio in New York was the late, great Art Rush Jr., who was on WABC for 25 years, so we had a black voice back then, I mean, in the 70s. So the idea that we can't have a black voice, and back then, Art Russ was the only one. Him, John Sterling used to do a show on WMCA. You remember that, Bill?
Yep.
I mean, that was it.
Dave Sims used to have a show.
Who's that?
Dave Sims used to have a show. I remember.
In the early days.
Right.
With Eddie Coleman. Coleman and the Soul Man.
Yeah. Since we're in this thing of your career track, and you talked about how I rescued you at the Daily News, what's been your path, man? And you had really a sensational career. And you really had to fight, you and Stephen A. Smith. There was a point where you really had to kind of fight, where you had to really fight for your career. You just kind of do that.
Very fortunate, and I'm trying to do it as quick as possible, but, being a full-time staff writer at the Daily News, Bill, at 22 years old, when I walked in there, and I never covered high schools in New York either. I was hired as a high school sports writer, and I started in, June after high school started. I worked all summer. That's when I met you, and I did Mets and Yankee sidebars and all kinds of stuff. And I was doing Giants camp, Jets camp. And they thought my work was good enough that they never put me on high school. I became a general assignment reporter. And then I covered the Nets for a year and the Nets for 3 years and the Knicks for one. And they didn't, people pushed back like I didn't belong in. One editor named John Gruber, who I'll never forget, who, would give me a hard time when I would come in the office and say, that wasn't good or whatever. And I didn't run from the guy. But instead, Bill, what I did was I used to take my stories over to his desk every time I saw him. And I would say, John, help me make this better. How can I make this better? And I put the onus on him. It ain't enough for you to just tell me that something's not good. You know, writing is very subjective.
Right.
Math is 2 and 2 is 4. I don't care who's doing the math. You know that you can hand out a column to 10 people. 5 will say it's great, and 5 will say it's the worst thing they ever read. Okay, right. So unless you're talking about grammatical errors and all that kind of stuff, that's one thing. But I'm talking about it's very subjective. So he wound up, I forced him to help me. From there, I left and I went to Cincinnati, which was a great 2 years. I covered the Cincinnati Reds. I was the first African-American to ever cover the Reds. I covered them in 91 and 92, made a lot of great friends there, won writing awards. Baseball was my passion. My friends thought I was crazy when I left New York, my hometown, covering the Knicks. You know what I mean? Like, how could you leave? But, Bill, I believe that was the turning point of my career. That's why I became a columnist when my other friends never made it there. They never got there because, you know, you had to be able to cover baseball in these big cities in order to be a general columnist. And you just couldn't. The NBA and NFL were good, but they weren't every day. And that's what you, for 6 months, it's every day. And if you don't know baseball or can't cover it, it's hard for you to be a columnist in St. Louis or in LA or in Boston. How could you know what I mean? So going to Cincinnati, I used to write a column every Sunday and whatnot. And they were so provocative. You remember Randy Myers from the Mets?
Yep.
Yes.
So Randy Myers, he came up to me one day and he said, "Rob, you can't write stuff like this. This is Cincinnati. This ain't New York."
But you played baseball, right?
Yeah, I was a baseball player most of my life. Baseball was always my passion. From as a kid, I either wanted to be a baseball player, first baseman for the Mets, or be a sports writer. Those were my only two dreams growing up. And so then I loved Cincinnati. I had no visions on leaving. And then the Free Press interviewed me, and I got hired as a sports columnist. And I was 29 years old, first black sports columnist at the Free Press. And Jamal, you'll love this. The paper at the time they hired me in 1993 was 161 years old. They had never had a black man who had his own sports column, which was mind-boggling, Bill, as you know.
Yeah.
From there, I worked there for a couple of years, wound up coming back to New York, doing that for a couple, to Newsday, being the first black columnist at Newsday in 1995. Again, an absolute disgrace that I'm not even that old, that I was the first black sports columnist at Newsday in New York.
Right.
Did that for about 4 years and wound up going back to Detroit and then, you know, doing radio. I was the first black person. The first person ever hired at the all sports station in Detroit. And when we started The Fan in Detroit, I did that. And then the television part came as I just always wanted to branch out. I did local TV in Detroit for 20 years, did ESPN, the show First Take, you know, was called Pizza when I started, worked with Skip. I've worked with Skip for since 2006. So think about that. You know, 14 years. Yeah. Skip is a great guy. I mean, he really is. Besides, you don't have to agree with his takes, but I'm talking about just as a person, you know, his takes.
Yeah, he's a black kingmaker.
You know, he's had his hand at a lot of people, and he's comfortable. And if you know his story, a black woman raised him. And he's comfortable with black people and is not afraid to talk about the issues. That's what I admire the most about him. A lot of white guys, just they want no part of it. You know what I mean? Like, they're just afraid to even have a conversation. And Skip isn't. But, Bill, you know that you were to say that the fight was at ESPN when I had the RG3 comment that blew up and people didn't. You know, didn't
appreciate. Why don't you tell people, because I've actually just used that phrase a few times to describe RG3, but why don't you tell our listeners about that, because it's very funny.
It was just, you know, like, to be honest, I didn't want to use the term sellout. I just didn't want to use that term. And so I just thought a cornball, you know, like I didn't think it was the end of the world. I was shocked at the response to it. But basically, RG3 was not to rehash the whole thing, but basically, you know, was saying that he wasn't a black quarterback. He was just a quarterback. And right. I don't know why our people are like that. If you told right. Vince Bergamo he was one of the greatest Italian quarterbacks ever, he'd kiss you. Do you know what I mean?
Right, like, right, right.
That wouldn't be a knock. You know right. what I'm saying? Like, so I use that term. Everything was good internally at the show with the producers. Nothing you see on television is off the cuff. People right. know what's coming, you know? Like there's show meetings. I've been in plenty of meetings where I say something and they say, Rob, don't say that on television. You know what right. I mean? So at this particular meeting, we went over everything. Nobody, none of the producers, nobody said, don't say that. So I had no reason to go out there feeling like I was, you know, upsetting right. apple cart. Why right. would I, right?
Right.
So, you know, all kinds of things. Hell broke loose. He
called him cornball brother. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I called him a cornball brother.
And it was a social media blow up, right? If I remember correctly.
Social media just crazy. And a matter of fact, if you go to the Urban Dictionary, I'm mentioned in there on the cornball. like I didn't invent cornball brother. My friend said it to me. I'm like, what?
Well, that's why. That's why none of the producers said anything because they never heard of that. You know what I'm saying? So it was the social media backlash.
You know, and the bad part was my contract, this happened in December, my contract was up. Like, it was like I was going to be renewed in the next 2 or 3 weeks, literally. Not only that, they had started a new show centered around me, which was First Take Saturday weekend. It was a version, and I was the main guy. So all of this was like, this was all... So, of course, that didn't happen. They didn't renew my contract, whatever. And, you know, it was one of those. This was the only thing. And I'll admit this. I never doubted myself. Never thought that, oh, this is it. You know, like I blew it. Or I just didn't feel that way because I really didn't feel like I did anything like so heinous. Like people have done some things in this business. And you know what I mean, where you won't get a second chance. And I didn't believe that. So the day at ESPN announced that they weren't going to renew my contract was a great day for me from this standpoint. The TV station I worked at, Channel 4, WDIV in Detroit, the general manager called me within minutes of the announcement and said, You worked here before you went there, and you still work here. Come in on Monday, and we'll sign you to a new contract. First date, which was, you know what I mean? At that point in your life, it's important. I'll never forget that call. Two former athletes called me immediately, and it was Dwight Gooden and Charles Barkley. And both told me, yeah, right away, dude, you are one of the best at what you do. Do not, you know what I mean? Do not be down on yourself. And these were the things that, you know what I mean, were really important at that time. And one of the big bosses at ESPN called me and he was devastated and said the way it was handled, he was devastated by it, that I had done nothing but good work there and that it just was a raw deal. And I appreciated the call because this guy called. He knew I had never been to the principals. I've been on live television there for 8 years. Bill, if I was reckless, I would have been gone. You know what I mean? A long time ago.
Right. So what was it? What do you think it was just about that? And by the way, because I've quoted you. But did you ever speak to RG3 again? And what did he say? And then, but what do you think it was about that?
I just think it was. I think what Jamal said, it was the social media, it was such a response. That was part of it. RG3 at that time was coming off his great, it was just the wrong guy. He was like the star of the league. Oh my God, this guy's ripping on. I read his dad's quote And his dad disagreed with me, but didn't think it was the end of the world. And RG3, I never got to talk to him. I never saw him again. But he did a magazine piece, and he thought that he disagreed, but said, nobody should lose their job over saying that. Do you know what I mean? So I was good with that, that he didn't feel like it was the end of the world or I had said something that was so
right
out of left field. And I think a lot of white people just didn't get it. I mean, let's just be honest. They were upset, but they didn't even understand. I think they were more upset that I mentioned that he could be Republican and
right.
had a white fiance. I think that's what, you know what I mean?
Right.
And when I preface it, and even by talking it, I did say, because I own a barbershop and I know what goes on, we all do. I said, the conversation that will be that's being had at the barbershop, not at Harvard, not at Yale. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
But this is a barbershop conversation. And I had people down in D.C. who called me and said, dude, we talk about this every second.
Right.
It's what it is. I learned from it. It made me stronger. But it didn't tear me down. And the big part, I tell people all the time, remember this. If you get in this business and you're a young person, it's not, no matter who, where you work or what you're doing, that's not who you are.
Right.
So I wasn't crushed that I wasn't working there. And I really wasn't. I know people don't want to believe I wasn't, because that's what I did. It wasn't who I was. And so, you know, I have talent and I knew I could take it elsewhere. And things happen. And, you know, Keith Klingscales,
right.
He started the Shadow League. And Keith hired me 2 weeks after. And Keith had come from ESPN. Keith knew my work. And so I felt good. I was writing again. I was working for the TV station at Channel 4. And I just kept going and just kept working hard. And now I'm back, you know, on the national scene at Fox. So I'm happy.
Knocking them dead. You know, but it's a great story about just you have to fight for your career. You know, Stephen A. Smith kind of had it, went through similar thing down in Philadelphia. You know, they were trying to, you know, do stuff and all that, you know. And
they dragged him through the mud, not only in Philadelphia, ESPN. You remember, he was off of the air for 3 or 4 years, Bill. They took him off NBA shoot around. They demoted, you know, like made him to be a bad guy and everything. His story is unbelievable to go back and then wind up, you know, being the face of the network after literally he was thrown out of there for 3 or 4 years. I mean, so most people have had success in life. You go read their real stories, and all of them have comebacks in there.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's talk some NBA bubble. You got the playoffs going on, all kinds of stuff in terms of, you know, protests and all that. But let's talk about on the court stuff for now. You mentioned earlier the Clippers, and you still like the Clippers coming out of the West. The Clippers were my pick all along, but I'm starting to see how focused LeBron and AD look over the past couple of days, and I'm a little worried. What's your take on that, on the Western Conference to start with?
Yeah, I'm still like the Clippers. I think they have a deep roster. I just think they just need to get Paul George to play like he's capable. If he plays like he's capable, they'll be just fine. They have to get through this series. They're not down in this series. I know people react to every game. If you win, oh, my God. Look how good they are. Just like when the Blazers won game one.
Right.
I don't think anybody's in their chest telling you how great Dame Lillard is now, right?
I think
that's over, right? Okay. Same thing. Orlando beat Milwaukee in game one. Oh, Giannis and Chris Middleton, they stink. They're not going to get to the finals. Have you watched the last three games? Right? This is what I'm saying. Like, so I get it when you lose. Had the Clippers won that game, you know what the narrative would have been? What a championship win that was. They came back from 12 points down. Paul George gave them nothing.
Right.
Patrick Beverley wasn't playing. You know, like, you can make that narrative. And that's the other part. The Clippers don't have Patrick Beverley. He's one of their best players. You know what I mean? He has an impact on the court.
Oh, yeah.
And Paul George has been terrible. Not bad, terrible. So if he can play like he's capable, they get through this series, and it's going to make them a better team as they go forward. The problem I have with the Lakers and LeBron, they're top heavy.
Right.
They're very inconsistent the rest of the way. You just don't know. The people in LA here are praying that the Clippers get knocked out because they know
now. Right.
that they're a tougher matchup. Do you know the NBA is all matchups, right?
Yeah.
So it's a tougher matchup for them to try to get past the Clippers. So that's why they would hope that the Dallas would win. Kenny Smith said something on our radio show. He said one of the champ would be either one of the two D's, and he was talking about Dallas or Denver. I was shocked that he went out on a limb like that. But, you know, Dallas is still alive. I don't think they're going to win. Originally, my pick was Clippers in six, so I'm going to stick with that. And I have Giannis in the East and Milwaukee. I know everybody poo-poos them. Mm-hmm. Remember, they won the first two games of the Eastern Conference Finals last year before Toronto won four in a row.
Right.
And they're not sexy enough because of the Chris Middletons and all the other no-names. He doesn't have a big-name second player. But they were putting together before the pandemic one of the greatest seasons ever, if you go look at what the Bucks were doing. So I'm going to go stick with my pick of the Bucks, and I'm going to stick with my pick of the Clippers.
Yeah, the East is tough. I mean, the Bucks are going to have a tough series coming up with Miami. You know, I could see that going six or seven games. And then Boston has looked strong to me. They just seem to have the most offensive weapons to me, and I – you know, so I could see, you know, I'm kind of torn between the Bucks and Boston.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm actually curious, would you have wanted to be in the bubble? Like, be reporting from there and getting tested every day?
I'm passing on the bubble. if you're in there or whatever, that seems like a lot to ask. I give those guys credit. I mean, it's an enormous a sacrifice. To do what they've done to get the season going, because it's just a lot. I mean,
it is
be away from family and friends and be shut. You know, I mean, I know it's on the campus of Walt Disney and it's not prison, but you're restricted. These guys are multimillionaires and have so many toys and, you know, and friends and lives to live. It's got to be an inconvenience, and we'll see. Hopefully they'll be able to finish it and they won't have any problems once they start letting family and friends. Because remember, after the first round, family and friends are coming in. So hopefully everybody will be good and the bubble will stay secure. But, I would have passed on the bubble.
Let me ask you about, talking about Mavs and Clippers. What about Luka Doncic? You know, already, I mean, he's playing great. I mean, his numbers are ridiculous. I mean, when you watch the games, he does control the game. Doesn't seem like the Clippers can really stop him. So in turn, you're getting these comparisons to Larry Bird. And, you know, is he already a top five player?
He's not a top five player, and it's all too premature. This world we live in is prisoner of the moment. I just brought up Dame Lillard after game one. People, this is what we do now. We want to crown everybody before they win anything, before they do anything. If they get knocked, like I said, if he missed that three-pointer, right, and they didn't win that game, they wouldn't be mentioning Larry Bird. I mean, that's the difference between – do you know what I mean? Like, making a three at the end of the game is the difference between somebody ready to crown you. How many times does this have to happen before win a playoff series, win a championship, win an MVP? Can you do some of those things before we – are ready to say that you're the greatest or whatnot. And I think that's where we are. I think that's the ridiculousness of sports today is people should have to earn it first. It doesn't mean that you can't admire his ability and what he's doing and the numbers he's putting up. But there have been so many guys who have come and gone and played well for a year or two. But didn't, you know what I mean? Weren't able to put it all the way together or never was able to win. And ultimately, I always say sports has a short menu. It's wins and losses. That's all there is. And if you don't win, ultimately, I'll give you the perfect example. Nobody ever says Buffalo Bills coach Marv Levy is one of the greatest coaches ever. Why not? He went to four Super Bowls in a row, right? Why not? You know why?
He lost them.
He never won.
Right.
Right? He never won. And I'm telling you, it's about winning, because people always try to act like winning doesn't matter. Winning does matter. It doesn't take you away from the equation or say you can't be great because you haven't won. But I'm talking about whenever you're talking about the greatest of all time, if you haven't won or won enough, you're not in that conversation. You just, right. Dan Marino was a great quarterback.
My favorite all time.
Okay, but he can't be considered the greatest. He went to one Super Bowl, they didn't win. And whether it's his fault, his team, the it doesn't matter.
Wait a minute, Jamal. Are you saying that you think he is one of the greatest of all time?
Oh, yeah. But I mean, you're right. It's a tough argument to win. You know, people want to throw Joe Montana and Tom Brady in there. And all, my only comeback is, you know, he didn't have the team. You know, he didn't have any running backs. He didn't have any defense. You know?
Right. But it's like even take Colin Kaepernick, and who's gotten a lot of obviously well-deserved praise or, you know, for, but think about it. If he would have won the Super Bowl, It would have been a whole nother level. You know, right. I mean, if you look at Muhammad Ali, if you look at every athlete who's protested, most of them have won. They've been champions. All of them have been champions. You know, Tommy Smith, John Carlos, because they at the winner's podium. Muhammad Ali was a world champion. He gave up a champ. You know, almost everybody, you go, every athlete, In our business, and you went, you know, at the beginning of our conversation, you talk about math. Sports is a way, is like math. In other words, 2 + 2 = 4. Ones, wins, losses. You win or you lose. You either get the rebound or you don't. You score. It's not a lot of this, like probably like your daddy and your mom and that kind of stuff. It's very, very finite. So I agree with Luca. And again, the great white hopeism thing is ever present. I mean, it's always ready to rear his head, you know. And I was thinking, I'm listening to the game. I said, oh, God, if this guy wins the game, we're going to have to hear this. And my problem with this, Rob, is I don't mind you say the guy can play, but it seems like with white athletes, you just can't say, yeah, this guy's great. It's got to be, he's one of the greatest of the whole generation of all time. Right. He's, you know, that kind of shit. I said, man, why can't he just be like, you know, have a great game or have a great season? Why is it you always have to not, man, he's like Kareem and I said, man, look at, yeah.
Right.
What question is, guys, do you think the same applies to women? I feel like women have to be the best for a long time before you even hear their names. Like, you don't hear these, like, one-off performances.
Probably.
I don't disagree with that. I think that it doesn't seem to be overnight like it is with guys. Like, guys, it is game to game. Like, you have a big game and people are already – I mean, Chris Broussard and I argue all the time. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is a great quarterback. Dude, he's not the greatest, not Michael, you know, like off of one Super Bowl. And if you go in, and it's not to knock the guy, but if you go and look, I'm just, Bill, did you know last year, he didn't lead in any of the top quarterback statistics at all. None. He went from 50 touchdowns, MVP. He went from 50 touchdowns to 24 or 26 touchdowns. Then people say, well, he was hurt. No, wait a minute. Drew Brees was hurt and missed 4 games and still had more touchdowns than Patrick Mahomes. It's not to knock Patrick Mahomes. And then I give you the list of all the guys who won one Super Bowl who you thought were going to win more. Right. They didn't win another one, right? Yeah. So my point is, it ain't that easy, and be careful to crown somebody in a sport like that where you think, you know, if you put together a string, Joe Montana to me is the greatest quarterback of all time. 4-0. 11 touchdowns, no picks in the Super Bowl, 3 Super Bowl MVPs, 2 times he won with Jerry Rice, 2 times he won without Jerry Rice, and 2 times out of the 4 times, he had to throw a game-winning touchdown to win the game. I don't know what resume is better than that. And you can say Tom Brady's 6-3 or whatever, but if you look at Tom Brady's tenure in the Super Bowl, Tom Brady's one of the luckiest guys who ever played football. Yeah. And that's why I call Tom Brady the LOT, the L-O-T, luckiest of all time.
Pat Stafford, did you come up with that? Pat Stafford?
Yes.
That's a great.
But well, what about?
I want to get back to Aaron's point, though, because I think she raises a great point, Rob. What do you think is the great barrier in our business to women great athletes? Because there is a significant barrier that they've got to cross. It's a great gender barrier. There is no NFL equivalent. What is a great mountain that women eternally have to climb to be included in these kind of passionate conversations about who's the greatest? I mean, I was going to say Serena or Venus or something like that. But
you know what I've always thought? I've always thought that the biggest swing and miss for women is the attention and what I mean by attention, there are more women than men, but women won't go to WNBA games. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like if they sold out 20,000 seats at Madison Square Garden for the Liberty, you couldn't ignore that. You couldn't discount it. Do you see what I'm saying?
Right.
If the TV ratings weren't 0.1 or whatever it is, this is what dictates, fair or not, what you pay attention to. And that I think is what has, to me, stifled. The WNBA is a great idea, but I don't know why, and I'm not saying all. Women, do they take their boyfriends, husbands to games? Do they? No, they'd rather go to the NBA games. And I know they grew up with that, but that's the only way you're going to turn the tide to make what you're doing important.
Right.
Is people have to have an interest, and it starts with women.
No, but I mean, people will go and see this Open this year.
Oh, yeah,
you
no.
Know, I mean, people.
Tennis and that stuff, that's the same, that's there. But I'm just saying, I think, you know, some of the other sports and it just, the interest just isn't there. You know that if there was 20,000 people for the Liberty, they'd have a beat writer and they'd trap, the newspapers would travel. Do you know what I mean, Bill?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They would do that stuff. You know, they stopped covering it when the crowds went down at St. John's. We talked about it before. There were no beat writers. Me, you, Michael Kay, Sandy Keenan, they stopped, right? Once the interest went down for St. John's, what'd they do? They stopped covering them like that. They wouldn't have four guys like us travel the country with St. John's.
Right. Hey, Rob, listen, before we let you go, let's touch on a couple other things. The NFL, do you think there's going to be a season?
I think they will do everything they can to have a season. There's too much money on the table. You know that. That's the deciding factor. I don't know. And the testing part, I don't know. Are these testing independent? Because when it comes to the colleges and these pro team, NFL team, I'm not so sure we can trust them as far as giving us the real number. Because there's a conflict of interest, Bill. You know what I mean?
So you think they just, you know, it's kind of, I kind of look at it like baseball. If baseball is willing to have about, you know, 9 or 10 players from one team get the virus, but they, you know, keep it moving, they do whatever they have to do to so-called fix the situation there and just keep it moving. You got to figure the NFL is going to make it through a whole season because a couple cases are not going to stop them.
No, but the difference is baseball is the perfect social distancing sport, right? Unless you're at first base or at home plate, you're not near anybody.
Right.
Football, I'm on top of you. I don't know, spit. You know what I mean? Like it's being exchanged. I don't know. I don't know what being on top of somebody or tackling people, you know, like what can that do? Do you see what I'm saying? You're way more in contact with each other. Exact opposite of what they talk about when they talk about social distance.
Our guest has been the great Rob Parker. He's becoming a legend in our industry. Oh man, you know, take it because they put a price tag on that too. But also go to his barbershop in Detroit, 19 years and counting.
What's the name of it again?
It's called Sporty Cuts on 7 Mile Road. And you can go check out, I got a couple books available right now. Called One is If I'm Writing, I'm Ripping. Bill, you like that? That's a good title.
I like that. That's good. I like that.
Tales of Rob Parker's Urinating Mouse. You got to take a look at that. Well, you could go to getrob.com. GetRob.com.
Great stuff.
This is great, Rob.
Listen, yeah, we got to do it again. I appreciate you guys.
Really. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Rob, you're the best. And thank you so much. And I'm going to call you so you can tell me about the other half of that story.
Yes. Yes. And you know what, Bill? Thank you. Thank you, man, for looking out for me when I was 22 years old. I'm now a 56-year-old man, and I've had a wonderful career, but I wouldn't have it without guys like you.
Cool. Now, remember me when my contract runs out.
You know, I got you.
All right. The great Rob Parker. Hey, Rob, thanks so much, man.
Thanks a lot.
Guys. All right.
That was a great Rob Parker, friend of the show, and just a really good brother. Listen, before we go, Jamal, there are a couple things to wrap up. You talked about the shooting, another police shooting in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Right.
A young black man shot. What do you guys think? I mean, there's going to be one of these incidents probably almost every week. At what point, what do you do? At what point are gestures not enough or words are not enough? I mean, what's the end game here?
My short answer is I'm not sure, but I do think that we're at the point, I don't know about you all, but I feel like we're having like unarmed black man get shot fatigue. Like, it's happening so much, and it's like, how do you make sure people stay on it and keep protesting, which is happening a little. I think this incident is, it's definitely gonna be interesting to watch because, you know, he was shot in front of his three kids. It sounds like he was trying to de-escalate a domestic violence situation, and those are always super tough. So, and now it sounds like he's paralyzed right now. So I just hope he survives. And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but being shot in the back, like, I mean, being shot, period. But it's like, how is he a threat to you? I don't care. I don't know what he's doing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's the point. And like you said, Bill, that's the interesting thing when you look at it in terms of a lot of the NBA guys spoke out against it right after the game. Chris Paul, you know, on camera when he was asked questions about the game, started talking specifically about Jacob Blake, how another unarmed black man was shot. And like you said, in the back, he was no threat to anyone at that time. George Hill from the Milwaukee Bucks made a statement saying, we shouldn't have come back to play.
Well, that gets to be, when we talk about next level action, do you just stop playing? You know, do you just stop playing? You know what? I mean, how's Milwaukee Bucks going to represent that city, that state, when you've got this rampant police violence against black people? Do you keep playing basketball? You know, there's got to be at some point some type of action, because the words clearly are just words. You got right. The Republican convention, which is spewing this whole fear mongering and hatred and all that, you know. So again, my question to you two is, at what point, how do you stop this beyond words?
I mean, a systemic change. I mean, that's obviously that's not coming anytime soon. It's not an easy change. A couple people speaking out, and all of a sudden, you know, cops are gonna be like, I knew I was doing something wrong. Like, let me stop. I'm like, no, it's part of the culture. It just shows you, you know, you can protest. There can be unrest in the streets. It's not gonna make things change right away. Or at all, maybe. We don't know. We don't know if this will ever change. So, so we have to, you know, really take it to places we've never taken it, because everything we've done so far hasn't changed a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it seems like police departments are very reactionary. It's like, you know, I think the lieutenant governor or the governor of Wisconsin is now calling for more transparency and accountability. And I'm like, why does it have to be that somebody has to get shot in the back before those conversations happen? I don't know. I'm not sure if they didn't happen before, but it just sounds like this was the impetus. And I feel like it's such a big, it's like a six-headed dragon. It's like, what is the part that is most interesting to you? Like, is it like attending civilian complaint review boards? You know, because I don't think we get to elect our sheriffs, right? And we don't elect police. So it's like, how do we make sure we stay on that and what they're doing? I just feel like marching is a good way to get let off steam, but there has to be more.
Yeah. Well, you know, we can leave it there, but, you know, I'm sure next week more details will unfold. I'm sure there'll be more player reaction, not only from the NBA, but, you know, maybe NFL players. we'll see. But I guess there's, as you were saying, Aaron, we've been dealing with this for, you know, decades, centuries.
Centuries, yeah.
Yeah, centuries. So the guys, do they continue to play? Do we not play? Or do we just try to get out the vote, fight voter suppression? A change of climate.
Right.
A change of climate.
Right.
In the nation. So.
And to me, the change of climate would be a start. So the getting out and voting, getting POTUS 45 out of office would be a start to changing the climate. Now, there's going to be plenty of work to do once he's out of office and someone else is there. It's right. Like a constant work.
Right.
Because that what the police are doing, it's not even just about police. It's like you said, it's the whole mentality, the whole fear mongering, the whole society backing them up for doing that. You know, every time something like that happens, you have at least 40% of the population saying that they did the right thing.
Right. Yeah. So that's the thing there has to be a change of climate. And you're right. Even a change of administration, we're so stratified that is of itself. And I said that would probably fuel something else, but at least it'll be some satisfaction. Hey, before we get out of here, I have a quick lightning round question about the WNBA playoffs and the NBA. First of all, Aaron, who do you think, who's your favorite to win the WNBA crown?
So Seattle is number one. And also, they were the ones that helped bring forward the whole Say Her Name campaign, dedicating the season to Breonna Taylor. So I like that. So I'm rooting for them.
Hey, Jamal?
I'm going to go with one of the greatest players of all time, Candace Parker, and the LA Sparks. So right. I think they'll take it.
All right. Well, I like both of those answers.
Thanks for giving me time to prepare, Bill. Appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, brother, we got your back here.
But I do want to give a shout out to a player from the Atlanta Dream. And Atlanta Dream,
yes,
their season is they don't have a chance. I think they're like 3-11 or something. So they don't have a chance to win at all. But they do have Elizabeth Williams, who's going to be a guest on this show next week. And she and her teammates and some other players wore those, you know, put those T-shirts on, supporting the opponent of Loeffler, the senator from Georgia, who had some unkind things to say about the WNBA. So got to give a shout out to Elizabeth Williams and the Atlanta Dream.
That's right. Great. That's a great get. And then just finally, NBA, who do you guys right now at this moment, who do you favor in the NBA for the championship?
I think I've said this for a while. I think the Lakers are going to do it. Since Kobe died, I think it's like, that's like the energy.
I'll go with, I'm going to agree with Rob Parker, and I'm going to stick with my Clippers pick. They're not there yet. They're still struggling with Luka and Dallas. They haven't played that many games with each other. Pat Beverly's hurt, but I do think they have the most talent, and Kawhi is probably the best closer in the game playoff time in the last couple of years. So I'm going to go Clippers, but I am a little scared of LeBron and Anthony Davis playing at the level they're playing right now.
Yeah. I'm going with the Toronto Raptors because I've got a brother, Masai Ujiri, mm-hmm. Who was shoved, speaking of police violence.
Wow.
The police lied about it and said that he was the one who initiated the contact. You know, he was, just think about it, the brother, you know, he's a team president. This is a moment of his life. His team had just won the NBA championship. He's trying to get celebrated with his team. As white policeman, you know, just looks at his black face, shoves him back. Hopefully, Masai will own San Francisco.
Seriously.
After this. Nobody thought that after Kawhi left, that Toronto would be back where they are. So I'm pulling for Toronto. Go Toronto. Go Toronto.
I have a question for you guys. Mm-hmm. So the U.S. Open is happening, but it's a bubble. Normally we would be there.
Is it a bubble? It's not really a bubble.
No, they're not staying. Those athletes are not staying on the tennis grounds.
Yeah, there's a That's bubble for true. The games, I guess, for the matches.
But they're not, all the our athletes are not staying.
Right.
There. Right.
They're trying to, but it's happening, but there's going to be no fans, right?
Right. Or no fans, no media. That's correct.
No media. Oh, I was going to ask you, Jamal, did you apply for credentials? There's no media.
Well, we do have Zoom access.
But we don't have the free meals thing.
No free meals. No free meals and Heineken's. No.
yeah, I'm care like everybody nightclub. Hey, let's meet up at the US Open. Hey, man, have you used all your credentials? All right, hey, anyway, listen. Thank you guys. That's another great segment. Thank Rob Parker. That was truly exceptional. And of course, on behalf of the great Erin Mathewson, who joined us.
Yes.
A little late, but she added a lot, as she normally does. And Jamal Murphy holding it down. We will see everybody next week for another version of Bros Pod, Bill Roden on Sports. Everybody continue to stay safe, be smart, wear your mask, and God bless. We'll need it.
Oh, and remember, leave a review and give us a high rating at Apple Podcasts, Bill Roden on Sports. And if you ask a good question on there, we will answer it for you on air. So definitely. And also follow us on social media at BrosPod on Twitter and Instagram.
Yes.
Good night. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.